Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first ever episode of the U.S. Arsenal podcast. I am your host, Michael Dalo, and I have to laugh at myself first and foremost because I couldn't have picked a better time to start this podcast following a 2-1 loss to our bitter rivals, Tottenham Hotspur, in the North London Derby. A day that I was pretty sure would be filled with happiness, a day where we could talk about the continued success under Mikel Arteta, great building blocks that are being set into this team, a great attitude. But instead, we have to start on the darkest note possible. And it couldn't feel any more right to me as potentially the most depressed Arsenal fan on the planet. Folks, thank you for listening and welcome to the U.S. Arsenal podcast. So our first ever guest on the U.S. Arsenal podcast is actually hailing from Winnipeg, Canada. On the podcast today, we have Mahith Gamage. Hello, Mahith, and thank you for joining.
Hey, thank you so much for putting me on this first episode. It is an honor, although I would have preferred to be discussing a win. Still fun to be on here and to be the first guest.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really thought that we were going to get a win today, and that's why I chose today specifically, you know, big game. Arsenal were starting to play well. It just felt like it was going to be a win, didn't it?
Yeah, I was like 99% expecting a win. And, you know, the first 5 minutes I thought, okay, you know, maybe we're not playing as well today as we have been for the last couple of weeks, because the first few minutes were really, really sloppy. And then once Lacazette scored the goal, I was, you know, I for sure thought that this was going to be a W. But, you know, I think after a few weeks of not having, you know, many errors in the back, we kind of got ahead of ourselves. And then when that happened, I was thinking, you know what? I remember this. I've seen this before.
Just the sucker punch. That's all it is.
Yeah, and it's happened so many times over the years. But, you know, just a few weeks of not seeing it, we kind of forgot about it. And then it popped up from the back and
it's just how it goes being an Arsenal fan. You know, I have such a short-term memory because I feel like I repress everything. I want to forget what happened at Manchester City and just Brighton. Mm-hmm. Because we've played so well the past few weeks, and it's just, we're back. This is Arsenal. We're back to it. It just goes to show that it takes a lot longer than a few weeks to really improve. And when you play a team like Tottenham that's going to give you a game, it's just you gotta bring it, and we really didn't today.
But yeah, I think you know, the Man City and Brighton games, we kind of, you know, gave the team the benefit of the doubt just because they hadn't played in 3 months and, you know, everything like that. And then once it started getting going, you're thinking, okay, well, you know, this is, we have a good team, we're playing well and we can win games. But like the one thing I do like is that if we keep playing like this, I think, you know, from the start of next season, you know, I think we would win way more games than we have this year, just based on how we've been playing over the past few weeks, if that can keep up you know, September, October.
Yeah, totally agree. And we're going to get into a little bit more of next season talk a little bit later. But let's start from the beginning today. Did you like the lineup out there today? No Saka. We had the 3-4-3 going on. Kind of the new system that Arteta has. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I like the starting 11. I think that is, for the most part, the best team we could have put out today. You know, I think some people were disappointed to see Bukayo Saka, but we have a lot of games. And, you know, we play Liverpool on Wednesday, I believe. So they come quick and fast over the past couple of weeks, and it's not easy, especially for an 18-year-old, to keep starting these games and keep performing at a high level. And obviously Pepe is our, you know, club record signing, and he should be trusted in these sorts of games. And yeah, I didn't have a problem with the lineup. I think the Xhaka Ceballos midfield has been working really well. Hector Bellerin last couple games has been good. Tierney, a little bit disappointed with him today, but for the most part, you know, I like him at left wing back. And the back three, you know, while those guys are, you know, Luis Mustafi, Kolasinac, not players that you would associate with being, you know, good defenders, but yeah, to be fair to them, the last few weeks they've all been pretty good. So, you know, looking at it, I wouldn't have been disappointed, just because that's pretty much the strongest team I feel we could have put out.
Right. Yeah, I like this 3-4-3 formation. I think that we need so much help in the midfield that I really like the idea of Tierney and Bellerin getting involved so far up. It's just, we saw the issue with the back three today is that none of these defenders can actually defend well. I'll say bar Mustafi. I mean, we saw flashes of old Mustafi towards the last 15, 20 minutes of the game where he just went into complete panic mode. But aside from that, it's tough to play that formation. And with those players, it just makes it a whole world more difficult. But one thing I want to ask you, so from that starting lineup, I was one of the people who was upset to not see Bukayo Saka. And I understand, you know, we have a lot of games. He's 18 years old, but he has been stunningly good. And today with Pepe, I was very disappointed in Nicola Pepe. Did you feel the same way? I've been seeing mixed reviews on online.
Yeah, I mean, I think the intent was there from him and the ideas were there, but it just wasn't really coming off. He was getting into the right positions, I felt, and he was, you know, getting into positions where he could have been dangerous, but he didn't really come up with the goods today, and he gave away the ball a little bit too often for my liking when in possession. A couple, you know, loose touches. I believe in the first 10 minutes or so, he had a loose touch that led to pretty much a golden opportunity for Harry Kane, which Martinez, as he always seems to, came up big on. But, you know, other than that, yeah, I wasn't very impressed with Nicola Pepe today. I think for a player that expensive and, you know, I know, you know what, adjusting to a new league or whatever, but it has been nearly a year now, and you'd expect him to look really dangerous in these sorts of games based on the money that we spent on him, based on how he performed last year. But I think, you know, he's really, really got to improve against playing playing against teams that, you know, aren't necessarily going to give him a lot of space. Yeah. And necessarily, like, especially in behind, because if you look at his goals last year at Lille, all of them, or not all of them, but like a lot of them were from counterattacks when he's in a lot of open space. And he's, I think, just got to get used to playing against teams that aren't necessarily going to give you so much space and against teams that are going to give us the ball, you know, because not every team is just going to try and, like today, you know, 80% possession in the second half is ridiculous. And a player like Pepe, who is more dangerous in open space, isn't going to get the type of situational, you know, benefits to his play that he thrives on. So that's an area that he really has to improve. And to be honest, I knew this back when we signed him, and I would have expected him to improve it by now, but he hasn't really. The only times that he really looks dangerous against this sort of thing, you know, against teams just sitting back and not really giving him a ton of space, is when he cuts in on that left foot and goes to the far corner, which we've seen a couple of times. But other than that, he's just not as dangerous as he should be, I feel, in possession.
Right, and that's a huge problem for your club record signing. And I have been Team Pepe since the day he signed, and I will be till the day that I die. But I'm becoming more and more frustrated with him as the games go on. And his place is in jeopardy from an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think the 18-year-old Bukayo Saka might be a better fit for this team. Like you said, there's not many counterattacking opportunities in the way we're playing right now. Spurs, the press killed Pepe. It felt like he couldn't do anything. And the few times that he did, like you said, he cut in on that left foot. But he needs to be doing so much more against, especially a defender like Ben Davies, who he should be beating for pace basically every time he has the ball, I feel. It's disappointing to see kind of where he's been. I mean, he hasn't really played since the restart, but even before that, it was, you know, I'm trying to remain positive about Pepe, and I know that there's a great player there. It's just going to be difficult to work him into this style that Arteta is trying to build, I feel.
Yeah, it's a little bit frightening, actually, because $72 million is a lot of money, and then when you're having conversations like this, where you're thinking, is he actually the best option? You know, that doesn't happen, you know, at Liverpool with Salah, at you know, Man City with Mahrez or Bernardo, and all, those players cost less than Nicola Pepe. We have to remember that, right? And it's not okay to be having these conversations when you're a $72 million player and you're you know, in question against an 18-year-old academy prospect. And I, to be honest, I haven't been like super impressed with Bukayo Saka at right wing. I think he's to my extent of knowledge, I don't think he's actually played there even in his youth career. And I think he struggles a bit with the angles and getting his body shape right in that position. But, you know, he's 18, he's going to learn it. And I think he has the potential to be a really good right winger in the future once he learns to be creative when cutting in on that left foot. But Pepe obviously has more to his game at the moment, you know, being a good 7 years older or something like that. But, you know, it doesn't really come down to who has more talent or more ability. It comes down to who's performing. And right now you have to say it's Bukayo Saka and not Nicola Pepe. And that's scary, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we can leave it at that. It's just like you said, when you're having these conversations about a player who costs $72 million, it's a difficult conversation to have, and it's one that you honestly, you just don't want to have.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's go through the first half a little bit. So like you said earlier, we had some difficult times really early on in this game. I think 10 seconds into the game, David Luiz made us sweat a little bit. Emi Martinez kind of lays a weak pass to the top of the box. David Luiz doesn't get to it. But, you know, Emi had some huge saves in the beginning of the game. The one where Harry Kane tried to chip him over his head and he stood him up. He had a ton of great saves throughout this game. The Ben Davies rocket from about 35 yards out where he slapped it, hit the post. But, you know, I think it was 15 minutes in. We had a goal from Lacazette that was just absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God. You don't see goals like that. And Lacazette, someone who hasn't been his normal self basically this entire year, it feels like. I was so happy for him. And let's just for a second enjoy that moment of him scoring that goal.
Yeah, it's unbelievable technique, first of all, to, you know, from that kind of angle to shoot, you know, top corner at the near post. It's very, very difficult to block. And I think most players from those kinds of positions tend to go far post, and to kind of whip your leg around the ball while shooting pretty much straight is really difficult to do. And, you know, it was an amazing goal. And like you said, I'm happy for him as well. That's two away goals for him now in the span of, I believe, just over a week, which is something that he has struggled with a lot. I assume that, you know, the fans not being there is helping him a little bit in these away games, but it's good to have him firing because he's been criticized a lot. And although the season's coming down to an end now, we got three games left. It's a good sign, you know, whether he's here next year or not. You know, he's a guy that I like, and I want him to do well in the rest of his career. And, you know, I think it's really, really great for us that he's scoring goals now again.
Right. I agree. And speaking of, do you think he's going to be here next year? It's a difficult question, right? Because we have Aubameyang who could potentially be signing again for big money, we all hope. Mm-hmm. And we have Eddie Nketiah, who Mikel Arteta really seems to like. And I think Nketiah has a lot of Lacazette's game in him at a much younger age.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think it, you know, it'll come down to who's interested in him. And over the past couple of weeks, we've seen, I believe it's like Juventus, Atletico Madrid, and even Inter Milan have been linked with Lacazette. So those are clubs that can stump up the money for him if they want. And, you know, I would actually be surprised if he left, but I wouldn't be overly upset because I think that for $50 million, he should be doing a lot better over his Arsenal career.
Right.
And I do think that there's a lot of better options out there. And, you know, he is also 29, so he's not going to get any better, I would say. You know, he's not going to transform his game or anything like that at this age. He is what he is. And what he is right now is a player who is pretty much a rotation player at this moment in time. He's going to get the starts for the next couple of games just because of Nketiah's red card. But, you know, before that, he was in and out of the team, coming off the bench for the most part to a 20, 21-year-old who, you know, couldn't even get in the Leeds team. So it's a really tough situation for Lacazette. And I think, personally, if you get a bid of 25, 30 million, I think that's something that you've got to think about letting him go.
Oh, it just seems so low. There have been so many players in this market that have gone for so much more. But then again, you see someone like Sané who goes for, I think it was like 54, and that seems low for him.
Mm-hmm. Even Timo Werner is like 50, 55 right. million or something. So,
right. And they want us to sign Danny Ceballos for how much? 30 to 40?
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult to think about signing Danny Ceballos for that kind of money when you have players like Sané and Timo Werner going for only 10 million more potentially.
And Lacazette is a good player. And I know a lot of people, you know, criticize him and whatever, but he is a really good football player. I mean, last season, I'm just looking at his stats right now, 13 goals and 10 assists in 35 games. That is really, really good. That's, you know, that's top numbers for a player playing in, you know, a team like Emery's Arsenal. And then obviously in Liga, and he tore that league up in his last season, 28 goals, 3 assists in 30 games. Quite a few of those are penalties from what I remember, but still that's a really good return. And I think he would do really well in Serie A, or obviously Liga, and he's experienced there, but I don't know if any team there would take a punt on him. But I think Serie A would be a really good move for Lacazette. I'm not sure about Spain, but I think, you know, for the most part, he's a player who could thrive in most of the big five leagues. And, you know, I'm not surprised to see teams linked with him, because at the end of the day, he is still a very good football player.
Right. Totally agree. I just wonder if we do, say we do end up selling him, I don't know if we even need to replace him, because we have players like Reece Nelson, Bukayo Saka, Pepe, all of which can play the wing. And then we have Aubameyang, who is by trade a striker, a central striker, who has been playing out on the left wing because we have these players in the center. So I guess it does beg the question, like, would it be such a horrible loss to lose Lacazette?
Yeah, no, I think it comes down to whether Pepe can not technically like replace his goals, but make up a good chunk of it next year, because Lacazette only has, you know, I think 9 goals this year in the Premier League, which is a pretty average return for a player of his caliber. And, you know, Pepe has, I think, 5 or 6 goals. If he can get, you know, 12, 13 goals next year, that's pretty much making up what Lacazette brought to the team. And then perhaps Aubameyang can play through the middle. I do think that we would have to sign either a winger or a striker. I think you have the option with that because of Aubameyang, which is actually pretty nice. Like, they can look at strikers and left wingers and decide which one is the best fit for the team, just because Aubameyang is proven in both those positions, and I think he's safe to play as either a center forward or a left winger. But, you know, to answer your question, no, I don't think it would be a big deal to lose Lacazette.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyways, Lacazette scored a fantastic goal. And I think it was only but 2 minutes later we had the Arsenal of old come back to us. A horrific back pass from Siad Kolasinac to David Luiz, who really, looking back on it, I was angry on Twitter, but was not at fault. Just a horrific pass from Kolasinac. Son comes over and steals it. Emi Martinez really has no chance one-on-one. And it's tied up at 1-1 on a horrific mistake. And it's just that back three, Mustafi, Kolasinac, David Luiz. It's a back three that no team in the world would probably want, but it's the one that we have now. And something that I was thinking about as I was watching this game was, how poor has Rob Holding been since his return from his injury that he can't get into this defense?
Yeah, even Socrates can't get in at the moment, which right. is a surprise. And to be honest, I'm a little bit surprised that it hasn't been Tierney at left center back with Saka on the left at left wing back. But, you know, it is what it is. And you know, just going back to that goal, I mean, it's just something that, you know what, I work as an intern for a scouting agency here in Canada, and we work closely with some of the Canadian Premier League clubs, which is low-level professional football. And the leagues we look at when we're scouting players is like Ireland, New Zealand, Serbia, second division, like, you know, like lower professional leagues. And I don't think I've ever seen a player do something like that, because he looks up and he sees David Luiz moving to his left, and he's moving at a decent pace. He wants that space on the left flank, because there's so much of it. There's a lot of space in the left flank. David Luiz is moving towards that. And then Kolasinac looks up and passes the ball about 3 or 4 feet to his right on the side that Heung-min Son is on. And that makes no sense. Obviously, David Luiz isn't going to catch up. Son is faster than him. Plus, he's moving in the complete opposite direction.
Yeah.
And I was literally like flabbergasted. Like, I've never seen that before from players who play at lower pro levels, and to see someone playing for Arsenal and make that, pass, I literally couldn't believe it. I mean, it's something that I never would have expected. And it's not as if, you know, he's tired and it's the end of the game yeah. and he's being whatever. It was a good 18 minutes or something into the game, and it was just so shocking. I would not expect that from any professional player anywhere, let alone at one of the top clubs in England.
I mean, with this defense, though, it's just par for the course. It's like each week we just wait for the next one to make a mistake.
I mean, and nobody's surprised. Yeah. Like, yeah. Nobody was surprised, even though when you're looking at it, it's shocking and no player should be doing this. You're looking at it and you're thinking, that's Kolasinac for you.
Kolasinac is a really tough one because I think he's good at some points, but honestly, I was just trying to recall the last time I said, oh, Kolasinac had a good game, and I honestly can't remember. Mm-hmm. He's not good enough. I think, unfortunately, that's what it comes down to. He just puts everyone in a tough spot when he passes the ball. I think I've seen like almost 10 times today where he passed the ball to someone who was completely trapped. It's just frustrating.
He's just uncomfortable, I think, on the ball, which is not something you want from a left center back.
Right, and especially in a team that Mikel Arteta is trying to build, seemingly, to play a little bit like Manchester City and pass out of the back so frequently. But, anyways, we go into halftime, all square, a little bit depressed because we had that horrific error. And at halftime, I was really calling for Pepe to come off, and eventually we did have him come off for Saka. And the second half just feels like a blur to me. I feel like we had a lot of the ball. I don't know if that... Did you say 80% possession we had in the second half?
I believe like with 15 or so minutes left in the second half, the possession in the second half was 82-18 for Arsenal.
It's crazy. So it felt like we were playing pretty well. And then I feel like our back three just got completely discombobulated. Spurs just started to play really wide, and then we completely broke down. And I mean, Emi Martinez was left out to dry a couple times, and he came up huge. People online, I'm not in this camp, I want to know if you are saying that Emi Martinez is potentially a better goalkeeper than Bernd Leno. I don't think we have a large enough sample size here.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not a big enough sample size. And, you know, the thing about Martinez is we've seen him play for a couple of years, and he's played in, you know, the cups and whatnot, and we haven't really, you know, been in a position to talk about how good he is until about now, you know. So it could just be he's in really good form at the moment. It could be that we were, you know, ignoring how good he was in the past. But, you know, at the end of the day, he is like 26 or something, and we're only starting to have this conversation now. And it's only after about 4, 5, 6 games that he's been playing in. So I personally don't think it's anywhere near enough to, you know, keep that conversation going. But if he continues it into next season, it's a good, healthy competition to have, because I do think that they're both really good goalkeepers. I think Bernd Leno is a better shot stopper, and I think Martinez is better with his feet, which, you know, is kind of frustrating because you'd obviously prefer to have that package in one goalkeeper. But I think it'll be interesting, but I don't think Bernd Leno is losing his number one job anytime soon.
Yeah, no, completely agree. I just wanted to bring it up because there were some rumblings on Twitter from some of our followers, but it definitely is Bernd Leno's job to lose, and I don't think he's losing that when he comes back healthy. But yeah. Anyway, second half, I mean, what it came down for the game and for me is just the set pieces, and we can't defend them. We never can. And it's just completely frustrating. I mean, they put in a nice cross. Alderweireld gets up and he slots it home. And it seemed like he was almost uncontested. It's just another frustrating aspect of this Arsenal team. Something that needs to be worked on aggressively by Arteta. I think defending set pieces have been... I think I read a stat there, 45% of Arsenal's goals that have been given up this year have come from set pieces. And I just don't know how we go about changing this. Is it just a matter of getting some new defenders?
You know, it's a tough one because for the most part, I think our defenders are pretty good in the air. I think Mustafi is really, really good in the air.
Excellent in the air.
He's somebody who makes a difference on both sides of the ball when it comes to set pieces. But, you know, I think it's just the matchups that we have and the sort of size of the players that we have around. I mean, if you look at anybody past our back line of like Mustafi, Luiz, I mean, who can win a contested header? Aubameyang can't. Lacazette can't. Pepe, for the most part, can't. Ceballos can't. Tierney completely lost Alderweireld today. Yep. And, you know, Bellerin, I don't trust him with that either. Xhaka, he's a tall guy, but he's not quite a jumper. And so pretty much we're relying on Mustafi and Luiz on all those set pieces, whether it be attacking or defending, to be honest. Because I've never seen, you know, Aubameyang or Lacazette win a header from a free kick or anything like that. Unless it's like a near posting. I think Lacazette has done that a couple of times. But I just think it comes down to what our players are good at. And, you know, turns out only one or two of them are really, you know, good on set pieces. But, you know, it was Tierney who lost Toby Alderweireld. And that matchup was a bit unfair because Alderweireld has like 4 inches or 5 inches on him. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the same old story is the issue.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much knowledge you have on Saliba. Do you mm-hmm. know a lot about him? I know you're, like you said, you're a scout. You've studied a lot of these players. Do you have any thoughts on Saliba coming into this team and how he can help?
Yeah, you know what? I think if we keep this formation for next year, I think he would fit in perfectly where Kolasinac is right now, which I think is a good thing, a very, very good thing. And, you know, he's 6'4". He's very athletic. He's a player who will help us on set pieces and such. I don't want to put too much pressure on him again. He's 19 years old.
Right.
He's going to make mistakes. But what I want to say is that his mistakes are going to benefit him, whereas the mistakes that guys like Kolasinac and Luiz are making aren't, you know, going to change them, aren't going to improve them. They're not going to learn from them. They're all old. I mean, Luiz is very old. Kolasinac is like, I think his late 20s. He's, you know, technically in his prime, although I don't think he has one.
He's missed his prime.
Yeah. But you know what? I think Saliba adds a lot of what we need to the back line. Athleticism, which is something we do not have back there whatsoever. 6'4", he'd be our tallest defender. And yeah, you know, I think he's going to be a good player for us. And I think for the most part, I think he actually will improve the back line. Despite being 19, I think he's going to improve it. But I don't think he's going to just single-handedly make a massive, massive difference, you know, in terms of how many goals we give up and such. I think he's going to be a really good young player to watch and somebody who's going to be in our team for a long time. But I'm not expecting him to just come in and you know, be like Van Dijk and just completely change the complexion of the team. Although I think he'll improve it.
Right. Well, let's not forget that we have Pablo Mari as well. So we do have reinforcements at the back. I just wonder who are going to be the players that stay. I mean, we signed David Luiz for a year extension. We signed Pablo Mari for, I believe, 4. Cedric Suarez. We extend Danny Ceballos' loan all in like the past 2 weeks, I believe. So yeah. It seems like Socrates is basically complete with his Arsenal career.
Yeah, and he should be done.
Right.
Now. Yeah.
And is Kolasinac also on that same boat?
Yes, I think he should be. Yeah. Absolutely. Him and Socrates are the ones who should be gone. Luiz is staying. I think Mustafi should stay just based on how he's performed the last few weeks. I think he can be a decent defender for us. And it's not, you know, a case where we can just go out and spend all this money just to, you know, replace all of our defenders. We can't do that. And Mustafi is I think the best one at the moment.
Agreed.
Or at least the best fit one. So I think he has to stay. So next year I'm expecting kind of the center back core to be like Luiz, Mustafi, Pablo Mari, Saliba, and probably Rob Holding as the fifth, although I don't know if he'll be sold. I'm expecting Socrates and Kolasinac for sure to be sold. Mavropanos, not sure what's going on with him. And Callum Chambers is another interesting one. I think maybe he'd be that fifth choice, but I think it'll be between him and Rob Holding. I think one of them should be out of here.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, what's Rob Holding doing so badly that he can't get in?
Yeah.
And I mean, we've seen in the few games that he's played, I think aside from Sheffield, he was pretty poor basically every time I've seen him play since his return. But Callum Chambers is a good shout because I really forgot that we had Callum Chambers in this team because he's been hurt for so long. And Callum Chambers was having a great year before he got hurt.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Rob Holding did have one good game. I think it was against Southampton.
Mm.
like a couple weeks ago. He was really good. But other than that, yeah, nothing special.
Yeah, as I'm wearing a Rob Holding jersey, I think I curse the players that I buy their shirts.
Yeah.
And staying on that same topic of me cursing players, I saw you tweet before you jumped on the podcast about how you thought Mesut Ozil would have been a good addition to this game. Can you give me a little more insight to that?
Yeah, if you look at his prime for Arsenal, like 13-14, 14-15, 15-16, those were his three best years. 16-17 is pretty good as well, to be fair. Those were the days where we would dominate games in terms of how much we have the ball. And he would be so influential in that. And I know he's not the same player he was back then. But if you look at the last couple of years, I mean, you could count how many games we've dominated possession on one hand. There hasn't been many. They've been very, very open games. The opposition, usually against us, has a lot of the ball, has a lot of chances. And those are the types of games, the end-to-end ones, the ones with a lot of physicality, a lot of movement, where Ozil doesn't really make it much of a difference, and he gets kind of drowned out by the constant action. But if you look at his Arsenal career, the games that he's played really, really well in, albeit a few years ago, are the ones where the teams sit back and we need to find a way to score a goal. We need to find a way to get through him or through this opposition, and he's the one who usually would come up with the goods for us. And today was kind of, especially in the second half, was a nice replica of those types of games where we have all of the ball and we're simply trying to find a way to get through this team. And I think that's a situation, a very rare situation, where Mesut Ozil would actually have made a difference. In the first half, no, I think he would have been great as a substitute today. But again, this is not something that happens often to us. And I'm not saying that Ozil should always be in the team, or that, you know, he's a great player, or like, he's a great player, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's not playing well right now. He's not, I'm not saying that, you know, I think that he would be key for this team. I'm saying in that 20, 30 minutes in the second half where we were just constantly trying to break them down, I think he's the one player in our team who would have thrived in that situation.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I've been pretty opposed to Ozil this year, just like every Arsenal manager who's come in.
Yeah, me as well.
It's disappointing because obviously we pay him $350,000 a week and he sits on the bench with an umbrella over his head and gets to relax. It's just frustrating because we know how good of a player he can be, but it's just he's not fitting in anywhere in this team. And it's disappointing that we might see an entire year go by before he leaves the club and we have to continue paying that wage bill.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, like, Ozil actually, he doesn't remind me of Elneny, but I think him and Elneny are kind of in the same boat in the sense that they're both really, really strong in possession. But there are really no teams in the top leagues who, other than like the very, very, very top teams, that dominate the ball and have a lot of possession. And that's why I think before Elneny even moved to Turkey on loan, I was saying that he would be perfect in a league just below the top five leagues for a good team in one of those leagues, because those teams will play really good football and play possession-based, you know, football. And the teams in Turkey, like Fenerbahce, Beşiktaş, and whatnot, they're, you know, the top teams in their league. And, you know, even in Eredivisie with like Ajax, PSV, it's those types of teams now that these players would thrive in, because I can't see them, Ozil, you know, thriving with any team in any of the top five leagues except for, like, you know, like the Man Cities and the Barcelonas, just because of the possession style that nobody really plays anymore and nobody can play anymore because everything's just based off intensity and movement and all that. They're old style players, and they're old style players that can't really fit into the modern game, which is really a shame. And, you know, to be honest, Ozil has been linked only to MLS and Turkey, which, again, are the leagues that I'm talking about, just below the top five, where he can play for a team that dominates the ball in those leagues, which I think he would do well in. But, you know, for the most part, I don't think there's anywhere that these guys can play in the top five leagues anymore.
I agree. And to the point of Mesut Ozil, how he would have probably been a good sub in this game, I think Joe Willock is trying to replace that spot, but in no way is Joe Willock the same player. He is the intensity guy, someone who can bomb up the field and maybe take a player or two on, and Mesut Ozil isn't that. And that's why I think we saw Joe Willock come in, because that's kind of what Arteta likes in a player, I feel. We get the slick passes through Danny Ceballos, but with Danny Ceballos, we're also getting that pressing intensity that Mesut Ozil doesn't have, and I it's difficult to fit him in.
Yeah, I like seeing Joe Willock come off the bench because I think he's a player that adds a lot of, like you said, intensity and movement in the latter portion of games. And we've seen that a couple of times. He's come off the bench in the recent weeks and been really, really good and made a difference when, you know, we kind of need him to. And I think he's going to be a good player for us. Probably not as a starter, but as in like for next season. But I think he's a really good option to come off the bench. And a much better option in most games than Mesut Ozil would be.
Right. And one more player I think I want to ask you about is Rhys Nelson. We saw a quick cameo from him this match and a few matches this season. I don't think anyone's really been impressed with Rhys Nelson. He had that amazing loan spell in Germany. I forget who he played for.
Hoffenheim.
Right. He was winning player of the months over there. Yeah. And then he came back and he's just kind of been a dud. What do you see in Rhys Nelson? Where do you think he can get as a player?
You know what? I think he needs the right environment, and I think Arsenal is not right for him at the moment. And I think he's a player that we should hang on to, but he's probably somebody that needs a loan next year. If you look at his youth career, it's very, very strong. And growing up, him and Jadon Sancho were put on the same pedestal and constantly compared. And at one point, Rhys Nelson was actually rated higher than Jadon Sancho just before they broke into the first teams at their respective clubs. And I think that's something you got to remember, that he's talented and he's shown it at youth level. And he was a very, very, very highly rated prospect when he was 16, 17, 18 years old. And I think he can hit, you know, really strong levels. And I think he's going to be a good player in his career. But, you know, we got to be patient and he had to give him some time. He's you know, still very much in the learning curve there. And although guys like Saka and Martinelli have come in and made a bigger impact at a younger age than Rhys Nelson, not everybody's going to develop the same. And I think he's, you know, probably somebody who needs a loan in a couple of years playing, you know, under a system that helps him and one where he can actually start for the first team and where he's not up against, you know, $50, $60 million attackers like Aubameyang and Pepe in competition for the first team. Yeah. But I'd like to see us hold on to him. I think, you know, we shouldn't give up on his potential so easily. And I'm expecting him to end up having a great career.
Yeah, I agree. I think a loan spell is perfect for him. I know earlier this year, or maybe it was last year, he was linked to Crystal Palace on loan or a full transfer. I think somewhere like that might be a good spot for him to go and learn for a season.
Yeah, I agree. I think a Premier League level is good enough for him. And there are some teams in kind of the lower portion of the Premier League who have players similar to Rhys Nelson that are actually doing very well. You think of guys like Saint-Maximin or Wilfried Zaha, you know, those guys are key players for their teams. And I think Rhys Nelson can be a key player for a Premier League team next year, albeit a lower half one.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. But anyways, we've talked a lot about the different players on the team. We've talked about this game today. I mean, we trudged through this game today, if we're being honest. I tried to put it in the back of our conversation here a little bit so as not to depress myself or you or our listeners. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I think now, unless you want to talk about Matteo Guendouzi pretty quickly, because it just popped into my mind, let's do that before we preview the Liverpool game.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on Matteo Guendouzi? I want to sell him because I'm all in on the Arteta is changing the culture. He's putting his foot down. Anyone who doesn't want to be here or listen to him, get out. But on the other hand, very, very good player, I believe. I think he has a lot of potential. It would be tough to see him go, especially if it was a low sum. What do you think?
Yeah, he is an unbelievably gifted player who has a very strong understanding of time, of space, in the middle of the pitch. I think he's very silky. He's very good on the ball. I think he's going to be a great, great, great player in his career if he fixes up his attitude. And that's not something that looks to be easy now, because he really looks to be a bad apple, which is really unfortunate for somebody who's only 21. He seems like somewhat of a coward to me in some way, you know, refusing to apologize, going after Neil Mopé only after he scored the winning goal and not after he injured our goalkeeper. It's just stuff like that. It just makes me so frustrated for a 21-year-old to be causing this much trouble, and especially the rumors of him refusing to apologize for his actions to his coach, to his technical director, to his teammates. you know, guys that he should be wanting to work alongside and wanting to better himself. You know, when all that stuff happened, when first all the news came out with Guendouzi, you know, being a bad apple and whatnot a few weeks ago, just after the Brighton game, I was thinking, well, he's young. You should, you know, if he's having problems, you should coach him rather than just sell him, you know, without trying. But now it seems with all the stuff coming out that they are trying and he's simply refusing to comply, which is, it's sad because, you know, obviously you want players to be working well with their coaches and their teammates. And for someone that young to not be doing that is really frustrating. But ultimately, I think he's going to have a great career if he fixes it up. Unfortunately, it looks like that won't be at Arsenal because it seems like we're not really giving him the time to fix up because he has been here for 2 years now. Ultimately, I'm sad because I do like him as a player and I think he's got a big future. Yeah. But at the end of the day, we did sign him for only $7 million. Maybe we can get, you know, 25, 30 million for him, which I think is very doable for a player of his age and ability, maybe even more. That's still, you know, a return of like 600-700%, right? So,
yep. Yeah. And if we can use that money towards someone like Thomas Partey.
Exactly.
Now that would be ideal. Because who knows if Guendouzi will ever hit the level that Thomas Partey is right now. So, I mean, we could just be accelerating ourselves there.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's get into a quick preview of Arsenal versus Liverpool coming up on Wednesday, the 15th at 3:15 p.m. Eastern time. That'd be 2:15 p.m. Winnipeg time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, Arsenal and Liverpool, not a great matchup for Arsenal. We're playing at home. I don't know how much that's going to help us. I think that this one is just going to be a game that we have to take our beating and move on. Granted, yeah. Liverpool haven't been playing great since winning the title. They got beat up pretty badly 4-0 by Manchester City. And then earlier this week, they lost to Burnley. Oh, no, they drew Burnley, sorry, 1-1. Yeah. And it seems like they've been in second gear since winning the title, if we're being honest, and that's completely fair. I just don't see how Arsenal, even if Liverpool are in second or third gear, get through this team.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm confident of is the midfield battle, because I think Xhaka and Ceballos are playing really, really well. And even today, I think they completely dominated the Spurs midfield, but the game was lost once Spurs kind of just skipped the midfield phase and started going straight to their attackers in the wide channels, because then we were kind of one-on-one with like Mustafi versus Kane or Mustafi versus Son, and that's not going to play into our favor. And, you know, I think it might be kind of a similar story with Liverpool. I think we might have the upper hand on their midfield, you know, potentially, but at the end of the day, I think once the ball comes to guys like Mane and Salah, there's very, very little chance that we're going to be able to stop them. With guys like Mustafi and Kolasinac playing in the wide center back roles and being exposed for the most part when Tierney and Bellerin get up the pitch. But we've shown that we can score goals out of nothing. Aubameyang does it often. Lacazette did it today. And, you know, with Liverpool, like you said, playing at a lower gear than usual, I think there's a better chance of us getting points, perhaps a draw. But I'm not counting on it. And at the end of the day, they are a much better team than us, and we'll go into that game as underdogs.
Yeah, for sure. Do you expect to see any changes in the lineup, or basically kind of same thing from this game? I think we'll probably see Saka over Pepe will be the only change that I'm going to guess.
Yeah, Saka over Pepe, I think, would be a guarantee, almost a guarantee. And I wouldn't be overly surprised. Actually, you know what? I wouldn't be overly surprised to see a different left center back instead of Kolasinac. It could be Tierney with then Saka playing left wing back and then perhaps Pepe gaining his or regaining his place on right wing, or maybe even Reece Nelson, or that's pretty much it. Yeah. But you know what, I'm expecting to see Saka in the lineup, but who that will be in place of, I'm not sure. It could be the left center back, could be Nicola Pepe, but other than that, I think that in the 3-4-3, I think that central four is pretty much set with Tierney, Xhaka, Ceballos, and Bellerin.
Yep.
Lacazette, Aubameyang will definitely start with Nketiah's red card, and goalkeeper, obviously, Martinez. I think it's just you know, Kolasinac and Pepe, whose places are under threat.
Yep. I actually really like that idea of putting Tierney as the left center back and then putting Saka in the role that Tierney's been playing, because that's kind of more of where he fits. I wouldn't mind seeing that, because then we get to see everyone play, basically. We get to see Pepe, Aubameyang, Lacazette, and Saka. And we don't have to deal with Kolasinac, so everyone would win there.
Yeah.
I can't really say I'm looking forward to this one. I think we both know that this is going to be a bad one. Let's hope for the best. Let's hope for at least a draw. I think we're capable of it. We're capable of beating anyone. Then again, we're also capable of losing to anyone. So,
yeah.
Such is the plight of being an Arsenal fan.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, Mahith, thank you so much for joining. You were awesome. We definitely want to have you back on in the future. Anything to plug before you go?
Not much. You can just follow me on Twitter. It's at Mahith Gamage, at MahithGamage. And that's about it. I work as an intern for a scouting agency. We do a lot of work there. Work very closely with Canadian Premier League and the USL and some other leagues. And you know, I'm always tweeting about soccer, about football, literally throughout my day. I don't do anything else because I literally just sit at home all day and watch games and talk to people about games and talk to people I don't know about games. So yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, have some good conversations, and yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, well, Mahith, you definitely know your stuff. Best of luck to you in your internship. And hopefully we can speak again pretty soon, potentially next season when Arsenal are winning the league, right?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, right. Mike. It was a great being on this pod.
All right. Thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning into the first ever episode of the U.S. Arsenal podcast. I truly appreciate it. And thank you so much to our guest, Mahith Gamage. Make sure you go give him a follow on Twitter. And make sure you also follow the U.S. Arsenal Pod on Twitter, at U.S. Arsenal Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And if you like the show, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Make sure you listen. Make sure you tune in. And make sure you reach out, because you could be the next guest on the podcast. And thank you again, everyone, for listening and giving this podcast a chance. I hope that we can continue this for a long time coming. And I hope that we have more happiness ahead of us as opposed to darkness and defeat. We might have to wait a few more weeks for that, Arsenal fans. But anyways, we'll talk soon, and come on, you Gunners.